I'm Catherine Lanfer, in for Celeste Headlee, and here with Miles O'Brien. I guess you're in for John.
I guess you could say I'm a good egg.
Yeah, you are a good egg. Hey, now let's just sort of go over what's going on in Pakistan. We were just talking earlier in the hour to David Ray, who's at the Air Force Base in Pakistan. We know the U.S. has at least 15 military aircraft in Pakistan. We know that U.S. helicopters have evacuated nearly 6,000 people. We're talking 700,000 pounds of relief supplies. Senator John Kerry yesterday announced that the U.S. is going to increase the aid to that country to 150 million. A lot of numbers out there, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a little more complicated than mere numbers, because when you're talking about the U.S. military presence and you're talking about it trying to do civilian aid, we're also talking about this not just as a goodwill gesture, we're also talking about it as another step in the war against terror. And we're going to be talking about that this morning with Taylor Siebold. He's a professor and director of the Ford Institute of Human Security at the University of Pittsburgh and the author of Humanitarian Military Intervention, The Conditions for Success and Failure. Let's go to Taylor Siebold right now. Thanks for joining us, Taylor.
Good morning.
You've written a lot about humanitarian military interventions. Why is the situation in Pakistan particularly complicated?
Well, it's complicated, as you point out, because of the scale of the disaster. It's also complicated because this is not just a humanitarian situation, but very much a political situation tied up with a military operation. And sorting out what role the U.S. military should be playing in that complex environment is not an easy thing to do.
You know, we just heard from someone on the ground a little bit ago, and he was talking about the Swat Valley and how there is a lot, obviously, of flood victims there and a lot of people trying to get help there. It almost sounds like there's a race between different sides of trying to get help there.
Well, there's always the problem of coordination, even in what one might call simple disasters, if there is such a thing, coordination between various bodies who are trying to provide relief. And in a situation like Pakistan, in the border areas, where there's a political competition going on at the same time, one doesn't even expect coordination, and you'll get a lot of confusion on the ground, which doesn't help the people who actually need help.
Taylor Siebold, we're now joined by Issam Ahmed. He is the Pakistan correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. Thanks for joining us, Issam. Now, you have written about the fact that there is reluctance among some Pakistanis to contribute aid because there is such distrust of the government and fears of corruption. How is that having an impact on trying to get help to people?
Well, you're absolutely right. Basically, a lot of people here don't trust the government to carry out the aid work. I mean, there's a lot of tales of corruption and mismanagement of funds, and that extends also to aid organizations and NGOs, because they're often seen as a means of making money. You know, people have salaried people there, and they miss deadlines, and there's all sorts of, strange things going on. So what a lot of middle class or urban Pakistanis are doing, the so-called civil society, is taking matters into their own hands and going out from the cities and into the flood-affected areas and trying to deliver that aid directly in terms of food aid and non-food items like tents. And you'll see groups of medical doctors, you know, leaving their homes and making 2-3 day trips to the affected areas where they see hundreds of patients. And I've spoken to several people who made such journeys. So they're soliciting a lot of private donations from abroad, from the UK and from the United States via Facebook, and getting a lot of money sent in via Western Union transfers. So this is something that we're increasingly seeing. And it's also to do with a sort of increasing confidence in Pakistan's sort of civil society. This is a group which rallied around the Chief Justice of Pakistan when he was deposed by the former military dictator Pervez Musharraf 3 years ago, and these same networks seem to have held since then, and so these people sort of spring to action when there's a disaster. And I think this is a side of Pakistan which isn't that reported in the media.
Now, Issam, talk about just how visible the U.S. military operation is in terms of getting help to people.
Yeah, absolutely. I was up in the Swat Valley 3 days ago, and over there's an area which is cut off from the main Swat area, from the road, because the bridges have been swept away. I think some 44 bridges in both the length and North Shore. But so the U.S. military is helping out a lot there. They're sending helicopters across along with the Pakistan military. They're working in tandem, and they're airlifting people to safety. And people there are very grateful. If you go and speak to them, and you know, they're telling me things like, you know, people who want peace realize that America is our friend. So they're very grateful, and I think that's having some kind of impact, and that's generating some level of goodwill over there.
You keep reading, however, that there are other forces, the Taliban being one, and also other groups, the Pakistan Taliban, obviously, also the Lashkar-e-Taiba, another offshoot organization, that they're also trying to get aid to flood victims. Do you have a sense how we're doing against them?
Well, Lashkar-e-Taiba, the group you mentioned,
yes.
they have a wing called Jamaat-ud-Dawah, and this probably is the most visible aid organization in the country right now. I've been covering the floods from the south of the country as well as from the north, and they have a huge presence. They have, I mean, thousands of volunteers, something like 3,000 volunteers. They're running, I think, a dozen medical camps right now. And so the U.S. really can't compete in terms of scale in getting that help out. But the U.S. is obviously the single largest donor to Pakistan, and that won't go unacknowledged. I mean, yesterday I think it was announced that the total aid to Pakistan has increased to $150 million. That's up from $90 million earlier. And so that's being appreciated over here. I mean, that's something that moving forward, you know, people will probably bear in mind.
Okay. Issam, I want to thank you so much for joining us. That's Issam Ahmed. He is the Pakistan correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, and he joined us, as you can tell, on his cell phone from Lahore, Pakistan. We also talked to Taylor Siebold, a professor and director of the Ford Institute of Human Security at the University of Pittsburgh. He's the author of Humanitarian Military Intervention, The Conditions for Success and Failure, and he gave us his appraisal of how we're doing over there. And of course, we'll be keeping you up to date on what's going on in Pakistan throughout the morning.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.